Hello, my socially responsible and extremely curious tribe, and welcome to ReWoke, Rewriting Our Kids' Education Podcast. My name is Michelle Person, and we are on a journey. We are rethinking, re-examining, and re-educating ourselves and our children. We have spent a lot of time this season discussing issues that affect our children before they even enter the classroom: health, religion, and growing an entrepreneurial mindset. This week, we are headed back into the schoolhouse to focus on reading. We spoke about reading last season, but what you learn here on ReWoke is that some topics are so expansive, they need to be frequently revisited so that we can glean every last bit of information, because the content is just that important. Reading is one of these topics. Our guest today is master reading teacher Beth Morrow, a 6th through 8th grade ESL teacher who regularly contributes to the ASCD, or the Association for Supervision and Curriculum, for the uninitiated. The great Mary McLeod Bethune said, "The whole world opened up to me when I learned how to read." If reading is the key to ensuring our children have access to that world, we need to make sure we know what to look for when it comes to reading instruction. And oh yeah, are you woke? On national tests last year, only 18% of African-American fourth graders scored proficient or above in reading. For eighth graders, that number was 15%. What is going on here? We know what these statistics mean: struggles in high school, lower college attendance rates, and higher incarceration rates. What should we be doing during reading class to address those numbers? Our guest today, Beth Morrow, has been doing that work for the last 20 years, and she has a few suggestions. Beth Morrow, thank you so much for being here with us today to talk about reading.
Thanks. My pleasure to join you.
Glad to have you. So before we dive into the importance of reading and why we have to make sure that we are being very mindful about how we use reading instruction in the classroom, especially when we are primarily teaching larger groups of Black and Brown learners, can you give everybody a little bit on your background and why you are the expert in this subject?
Sure. So I initially started as a secondary English teacher. I teach currently in Columbus City Schools. I teach middle school at Wedgewood Middle School. But my background before that was I taught for 6 years in a suburban district. I taught high school, ESL. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Columbus, taught 2 years at the Welcome Center, which is our newcomer. It was, at the time, our newcomer program, and now it's called the Global Academy. Mm-hmm. And then I spent 6 years as the district level coordinator for all of the ESL programs that we had at the buildings. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and I worked a little bit with the State Department, you know, liaison kind of in between and doing things like that. I've been at Wedgewood since it opened. The new building opened in 2008. The majority of our students are Somali, African, and also Latino. We have a pretty decent Latino population. As demographics shift and change, we've just shifted and changed. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay. Well, for those of you who were thrown off by some of those terms, all you need to know is that she has spent the bulk of her career primarily teaching Black and Brown students how to read. ESL means it is English as a second language, which means that, and like she just said, the bulk of the students that she's working with right now are from probably portions of West Africa, as well as Hispanic students. So obviously trying to make sure that these reading instructional strategies that we implement speak to them, so to keep them engaged and to help them learn how to succeed. 100%, she is somebody who knows what to do because she's done it for a long time at the district level. So now that we know what your credentials are, let's dive right into reading. Tell us what, in your opinion, in your expertise, what does good reading instruction look like just in general?
the foundation, I really believe the foundation is you really have to know the student. You can know the curriculum, you can know strategies, you can know everything about everything, but if you don't spend the time getting to know your students as a human, as just a young learner, and not even as a student, just as a young human, you're going to miss so many layers of being able to connect with that child. That's just my philosophy is I want to know everything about the kids that I teach, because there's a lot of things we can teach that miss the kid, but meet the standard or meet the goal. But when we figure out how to weave those things together, we get so much bang for our buck, and you get so much more investment at the student level of interaction, I guess. So I think that's number one, far and away. Let's see. I think also giving space to students to learn how to read if they're not comfortable reading, because a lot of kids, especially when I get sixth graders who come in, they're used to being told, here's what we read, here's the questions. But my classroom is primarily, we read a lot for pleasure. We spend a lot of time reading for pleasure. And I will have kids who come in sixth grade and they're like, I've never read a book, and they wear it as a badge of honor. Like, I've never read a book, I've never finished a book. And then by eighth grade, because my kids, I usually loop my kids unless they test out. And they'll come in, and then, you know, it's so gratifying when they come in seventh grade and they're like, we have a discussion at the beginning of the year, what did you read over the summer? And those kids, a lot of times, the sixth graders that came in with their badge of, I didn't read anything, they're like, well, I only read one or two books. And I said, but that's one or two more than you read last year. And they're like, yeah. And so we can have a conversation about books as people who are readers, not as teacher and student, you should be doing this kind of thing. So
that's a very important part, because you don't want reading to be looked at as something they have to do. You want it to be something that they want to do. And that's what you're growing. That's what you're cultivating. And I really love the first thing you said, which was about getting to know your student before anything. But before you do your first instructional lesson, before you decide which vowel sound you're going to teach or what strategy you're going to work on today, get to know your student. That is the basis of culturally responsive teaching, teaching the person and not teaching an idea or a standard. So I think that, you know, I appreciate that you said both of those things. Those were both great, great insights.
Yeah, I think that applies no matter what your content is. I mean, especially in, and I hate to keep bringing up, I hate to leave bringing up, but I've been talking about with my colleagues about, we're not only teaching our content this year, we're reteaching socialization, we're reteaching re-engagement, because the majority of our students have lost, you know, just a little footing in those areas, and school is the place to do that. And we have to create a safe, comfortable place for them to explore it, because if we just keep pushing to the point of content, we're missing so much. And we need to help students learn to create themselves as learners again, because they're coming from, you know, a lot of spaces where there was kind of a pause there, you know.
And they are students, so they were learning in the process anyway. So if you take 18-month pause and halt that learning, you've got to learn all that all over again. So where do you think schools in general fall short?
One of my thoughts is it's no fault of schools. It's just the pressure to continue to maintain the continuum of this student here needs to be this student here needs to be, you know, needs to grow. But there's more to it than content. And I think we're getting more of that through social emotional learning, we have some folks who do some mindfulness activities with us, And I actually became over COVID, over the quarantine, I became a yoga teacher so I could teach it in my classroom. I actually have always taught it in my classroom, you know, for fun, but actually went into it and dove into it so that we can, you know, learn to do that, to connect the whole child together, because it's not just a student who can do math and student who can read and all of that stuff, but it's connecting and making them realize that there's so many small spaces to fill that we can't just keep pushing through and pushing through. We have to take time to figure out what holes need to be plugged in and how to bridge those gaps within the child. There's we talk about the gaps, learning gaps all the time, but there's learning gaps within the child. And I just think sometimes we're so pressed for time, and we're so, you know, my classes are 48 minutes, and to come in and to get, we journal every day and we talk about books every day, and then we get to content every day. And sometimes you don't get all the things done that you need to do. And it's, I don't know how to add more time into the school day. I wish we could. So, yeah. You know,
So we're probably definitely, I think what I heard was we're falling short, recognizing that that kid that is doing well in your class, but maybe not so well in math, that you, and we're only looking at the math issue as a math issue instead of a whole child issue. I think that's and if you look at it more at a whole child issue, you might be able to find the missing piece that creates that bridge. But sometimes it doesn't happen, and for all the reasons that you stated, not enough time, you know, other things take priority, coming back from COVID, you know, all of those things are reasons why, you know, we aren't able to do what we need to do in order to facilitate a whole child mindset. But since you seem to be very aware and woke, as we say, what are three things that you do in your classroom to engage your students who are primarily made up of Black and Brown learners in reading?
Okay, I wrote this down. So I actually came up with four that I believe in wholeheartedly. Learn where they're coming from. Learn them as a student. Learn them as a child. Learn them as a part of a family. As part of learn their backgrounds. Talk to them. You can get so much more investment from them if you just show a little interest. Mm-hmm. I think a big one that we miss out on is teaching, especially in the digital age that we've kind of fallen into, quite honestly, in some cases, teaching explicitly, teaching explicit skills that you expect them to learn, because we presume, or we assume, that they learn these skills at home, that they pick up, you know, they're on their phones all the time, and we assume that they can zoom around their phones and get on these things, and they really can't. So
give me an example of that, because I think that is very important.
Yeah. So, for example, actually in my classroom today, this is a lesson that I love to do, is we're trying to integrate Google Classroom more into our classroom rather than just waiting for us to go remote again at some point and then have to, you know, teach how to access Google Classroom from the external rather than the internal in the classroom. And so the journal exercise today was we wrote directions in our journal on how we get on Google Classroom. And you think this would be such a simple, straightforward thing. We have, you know, we log in, we go to Clever, we click on Google Classroom, we enter Google Classroom. I have kids with one sentence, I have kids with three pages. I have kids that are like, I don't even know how to get to Google Classroom. So me, that's for me to know, okay, who do I need to teach this extra to? But then they had an appreciation because I took a few of those and I would read those. And I said, okay, I sat the Chromebook right in front of me and I said, let's read this step by step and think of how to do this. And at first they're like, you know, of course they don't want to do anything. They're like, I don't want to do that. So I opened it up and then we would read the direction and somebody would chime in. Oh, that's not right. You should do this. And I said, well, why is that? So just to make them make it something they think through, so that you can see where the gaps are in the thinking, And then we're going to do this again. And they're actually going to have a, they're going to have a little contest in my class to make login posters. That way we can post them in our Google Classroom so that they can just reinforce that should we have to go remote or should I have kids who are out, you know, for COVID, and they can refresh their memories if they don't remember. Because if you don't teach it explicitly, you can't have the expectation that they can do it. You're missing in the balance there. We can't keep assuming that kids are, even though they're coming with digital skills on their phones, we can't assume that that translates into digital learning.
Mm-hmm.
Because they come from so many backgrounds, so many different spaces and places and, you know, levels. So we have to teach it explicitly if we expect them to be able to perform for us, you know.
I think
and they appreciate it.
Yeah, they do. And I think I'm going to chime in and say that is something that I think every teacher needs to take a step back and remember. One of the things when you're a new teacher, what they teach you is you can't make your rules be things like be good, be responsible.
Oh, no.
because you're assuming they know what being good looks like in school. You're assuming that they understand what being responsible is in school. So if that's going to be your rule, you have to spend time unpacking that word good. You have to spend time unpacking that word responsible very explicitly, saying and giving examples. This is what it means to be good. And actually, we don't like that word. We don't like the word be good. But, you know, but just the example. But yes, the idea that explicit, that we have to stop assuming what our kids know and really find out, I think is a great tip.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found that lesson out the hard way many times. So at some point you have to pull back and see, because it creates a frustration level in the teacher. And of course, if you're frustrated, you know, they're frustrated. So you're just going to get them to shut down. So getting them invested in something like a simple, and I think some teachers would hear that and be like, I'm not teaching my kids how to get on Google Classroom. But if you expect it and they don't know it, then you're just setting yourself up for a circle, you know. So, and then having, my third one was having the expectation that they can learn, because there are some times that we just don't have the expectation that some kids are struggling with so many things. We don't hold the expectation. We don't hold space for the expectation for them. And they know that. They can sense it. Kids can pick up whether you believe in them or not. But you can say what you want. Kids can feel it. They sense it. And we have to hold that expectation. And my expectation for this student may not be the same for this one. But we have to hold an expectation. We can't just teach and go on with it. We have to expect that they will maybe not get it right away. Maybe they'll need way more time in processing, but we have to somehow let them know that we expect this out of you because we know you can do it. Mm-hmm. And then my fourth one was kind of along with that, is the environment in the space. I've had so many people come into my classrooms, students who are not my students who will walk by my door when my door is open, and they'll like pop their head in, they're going to the restroom, and they just pop their head in. They're like, I want to be in your class. And I'm like, I don't even know you. And they're like, we're not quiet. We're not a quiet class, but we hold space for each other. We're very kind. And when we're not kind, we talk about why we're not kind. We don't let anything slide, but we also have a lot of compassion. We understand. Today I had a student who had a meltdown, absolute meltdown, markers all over the floor. And this student has been having meltdowns, and everyone just kept looking back. And I said, is there something we can do to help him? Like, rather than just keep looking at him, because he knows he's having a problem. And one student just got up and went up and helped him pick up the markers. And the other student was like talking to him quietly. He was a Spanish speaker, so she was speaking Spanish to him. And I let them solve their own problems, because they're actually a really super sweet class. So they're just very kind to each other. But we have to model for them the behavior and maybe give a little prompting, but give them the space to process, oh, maybe we could do this, you know, and not stare at him, because if that was me, you know, I wouldn't feel so good. So we have to give him space. And that is the hardest thing to do when you're so pressed for time. It's like such a, it's a high wire act, you know, and it's, but you have to know you're going to come out better on the other side if you give them that space and that environment to process it.
So what I'm hearing after listening to your top four things is that it's more about building a sense of community and respecting the students as individuals than it is almost sometimes the actual instruction. Like, it's almost what I'm hearing is the reading instruction is almost secondary. Before you can even begin the reading instruction, you have to create these environments where our kids feel safe, where they're given that space, where you know them as an individual, and where they want to be. And then the reading instruction can begin.
I would agree with that. And I would even say, you know, I would even say to the, that, to the fact that, we were all taught in undergraduate, you know, get them to invest, get them to buy in, get them to, you know, be interested in what you're selling. But if you spend the time creating the space where they feel safe, you'll get the investment, you'll get the interest, you'll get them coming from a stressful situation in the hallway or a bad morning with mom and dad or a bad moment in the lunchroom, and they'll come in your room and they'll know, I can let that go. Like, and that takes work. That does take work. But then when they're themselves, then you, and you know them, you know, you can also challenge them. You know in what direction you can challenge them. I can challenge you, you know, maybe I know that you're not a strong writer, but I know you're strong in your verbal skills. So let's talk about this and then let's write it, rather than having you write it and then do something else. You know, just knowing those little ways in, you know, it's gone a long way. It's transformed my teaching. I'll be honest. I did not start that way. I was a high school reading teacher, and there was no place for space and softness when you're trying to teach, you know, Shakespeare, and you got to do this and this and this and this, and you've got to have this. That's why I left high school, because it was too much of that. And good teachers find a way to manage that balance, you know, and it takes a lot. I think it takes some introspection on the teacher's part of their own style too. So, okay. Yeah.
So are there any, so you've floated around, like you just mentioned that you started in high school and now you're in middle school and you worked at the district level. The space is given and the culture has been cultivated so that the kid can be engaged. Are there any curriculums or resources that you think that are superior, that you think are preferable to use in schools that do a really good job of engaging and making sure students get the explicit skills that they need?
I would have to say no, but not because they don't exist, but because... I'm sorry, when I read that question, I was like, no, I've got no recommendations. Because every situation is so unique, you have to find what works for you. Because we have things we have to do, and going outside of that, we have to have a really strong belief in what it is that we do. One thing I've done over the years that has, and it's not a curriculum, but service learning is a great way to bring in actual real world stuff and actual skills and content and develop an interest in the students so that they actually get really engaged. I had kids who went to high school and would come back to me and say, remember that time we did this project and we, you know, painted rocks or we did whatever. And you're thinking it's just a lesson, but you know, I don't have a curriculum. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So service learning, talk to us a little bit more about what service learning is.
So service learning is where we find some sort of project to get excited about and interested in, and then we align that with curriculum and skills and everything together to create some sort of project that goes beyond us, that goes outside, that takes us into the outside world, but it also brings the outside world into us. I've been a part of a lot of service learning initiatives. So I have done multiple projects with different groups, different sets of children. A few years ago, I did a group where we did a project with Columbus Police Department, and we did it wasn't as much service learning, but it was a learning to interact with the community. And we learned how to bike safely. We learned how to take care of bikes and repair bikes. It was all girls. Mm-hmm. And then we took our bikes with officers out and did multiple mile rides around the city, or not really to the city, but around the neighborhood. So we got familiar with the neighborhoods in that way. And then we would come back and talk about it and process all the things that took place. And those girls were so just so grateful to have that opportunity, because they wouldn't have had that opportunity otherwise. And it created a passion in them. They came excited to learn. They came excited. They wanted to go outside. It was the second semester, and it was, I want to say, like late January, and they wanted to go outside and ride bikes. And I'm like, we can't go outside. It's very frigid. It's cold. I don't think it was snowy. But it was like, we can't go outside today. And they're like, oh, but we want to go out and, you know, do something with our gears or whatever they had been taught. And I'm like, we just can't go outside today. So when you get kids who really want to go outside in frigid weather, you know, you've done something right. You know, you've gotten some connection there. So
it sounds a lot like project-based learning, service learning. And mm-hmm. a lot of times these terms in education, they can be, they sometimes are interchanged, but I worked in a district that was really big on project-based learning, and a similar project that some kids did where they had to map out the area that they lived in, the community. And it was this huge project where mm-hmm. they did their house, and they did the school. And then they had to create, they created writing pieces, advertising different places around the city. I mean, like, so when you say service learning is a great tool, I think that actually is a good tip. Like, whenever possible, don't make it just about paper pencil. Don't make it just about, words on a screen and a quiz at the end of the week. Try to make it relatable to the real life and applicable. Yeah. And then they will give you more. Mm-hmm. They will give you more writing. They will read extra books about the topic. They will seek out information if you make it relatable to them and make it something that they can really relate to. So that's actually, it's okay. And that's not a specific curriculum so much as it is a teaching framework, an idea for how to get kids engaged in reading. And so that's fine. But there's not a curriculum with a name. Thank you. No problem. So how can parents support?
I'm a teacher. So the first thing I'm going to tell you is come and talk to your teachers. We don't want to teach your child in a vacuum. We don't want to teach the kids in a vacuum. We want to know. Some of my best memories are parents who've come to me and said, look, we're having this issue. We're having this issue at home. And what can we do about it? And we work together. I love working with parents as a team. I'm very fortunate that I have a Spanish interpreter and a Somali interpreter that we can call home, have parent conferences. Parents will come in and just come in for a meeting, and we're bridging that gap. I mean, that might be one of the biggest gaps, but if there's, and I know sometimes parents are really reluctant because they think, I know my student's not doing well, or I know my student has had this behavior, or I know my student is not getting work done because, you know, whatever family reason, let us know that. Let teachers know that, because we can accommodate that. Most of the time we can create something where, something that brings together what the child needs with where the child is. Like, we don't want the parent to fight. There's no need to fight that battle by yourself. Not that it's a battle, that's not what I mean, but to have to deal with, we're in this together. And I wish I could tell more parents that when you're having a problem, don't be too, don't be afraid to say something. Mm-hmm. We have so many resources at our school building. We have so many community resources. We have, you know, so many programs and so many ways to offer help, whether it's physical help, whether it's emotional, mental help, whether it's academic help. You know, we have so many resources, and to think that a parent is out there, you know, really struggling to get this kid, their kid to learn or to engage or to even get up and come to school. Mm-hmm. We have resource officers that go to houses and knock on doors and get kids to come in, you know, and they're happy to do it. So, yeah. So come ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask for help, because that's what we're here for. We're here to help take care of the whole kid. And just like you, we don't want to have to think that it's all a school problem. And you don't want to have to us to think it's all a home problem. We can work together on a solution. There's usually somewhere that we can find something that helps. We have so many resources.
So parents, you can support by just reaching out. Just reaching out if you have a question. The teachers are there. They want to help. They want to bridge that gap. Beth, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. I really appreciate it. And I hope our listeners really got something out of it.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. It was an absolute pleasure.
Build relationships and teach the whole child. Everything else is secondary. What do you think? Hop on over to our Facebook group, Just Like Me Presents, and let us know. Show notes and resources are available on our website, justlikemepresents.com. Share this podcast with other parents and educators in your circle. Hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And leave a review so we know what we're doing well. Join us next week when we will be talking about woke writing instruction. Reading and writing go hand in hand, so we need to make sure our kids can do both. Thanks for listening, and remember, if our children can see it, they can achieve it. Parents, are you frustrated with traditional education? I was. Educators, are you struggling to find inclusive academic content that represents your students? I know the feeling. That is why I created Just Like Me Presents. Just Like Me Presents is a multimedia production and development company that stresses the importance of literacy, culturally relevant teaching materials, and active learning experiences. Check out our culturally responsive books and supplemental curriculums on our website, www.justlikemepresents.com. In the Just Like Me book and JLM pick sections, your child will be amazed at how many books they can choose from where the characters look like them. They've never had math explained the way we do with Remember Through Rhyme, and I can guarantee the history we share with Meanwhile in Africa isn't taught in any traditional public school. Let us help you get the tools you need to rewrite your child's education and set them on a path to success. If you have a child in kindergarten through fifth grade, trust me, you'll want to check us out. Our programs help students develop a strong sense of self, affirm their identities, and encourage critical thinking and entrepreneurial skills. Head on over to the website now at www.justlikemepresents.com and help empower your child to become the best version of themselves. And remember, if our children can see it, they can achieve it.